if trouble was money. I swear I'll be a millionaire. Money, baby. I swear I'll be a millionaire. Have money to spare, yeah. Worry, 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 babe.
Albert Collins. If trouble was money, he'd be a millionaire, he says, and he'd have all this money to do everything and still have money to spare. That's how much trouble he's in. That's from his 1993 album, Point Blank. It's a compilation of his favorite tunes. And it's called Collins Mix, the best of Albert Collins. Great blues guitarist. And when he lets loose, oh man, you could just sit back all day and listen to how he handles that instrument. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And what are we going to be talking about today? Let's see. Well, we did talk about the fact that President Trump's suggested budget is going to be a disaster. And we were right on point with that. It's a disaster. Essentially, in the short form, you'd say that lots of money is coming out of safety net programs and support programs for the working poor, the poor, and those dealing with major health issues. And also quality of life issues, you know, like housing, education, and so forth. So there's a lot of moving around of money from these areas into other areas, most particularly in the area of militarism. Lots of money being directed toward weaponry and war, and pretending that this isn't so. This is part of national security. But in this regard, the president is so painfully obvious in following other presidents before him. This is a long-known tactic that your popularity as a president depends on how militaristic you are. And in turn, the president is able to sell the idea to his political base in particular, but to Americans in general, that he is a security-minded president and he takes as his number one priority the idea of keeping the United States safe. But on top of the billions, in fact, it's now reached into the trillions of dollars for weaponry and things military, there is more money. And there, you can always find the money, you see. You can always find the money to pump more money into this area. The money just simply can't be found to build schools and to build infrastructure and to lift the poor out of a permanent underclass. and to provide jobs that are meaningful so that people can get back to being self-sufficient. This country does not have the foresight to do that. Budgets are not planned with logic in mind, but budgets are planned with political outcomes in mind. And so we do not have, and we almost never have had in recent years, a logical budget. This president, however, has a particular affliction, and that is using the country's money and anybody else's money to get what he wants. His children are also of the same ilk. The government is their supplier. I mean, it's an amazing thing. I saw an article where Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump had been turned down several times by the authorities when they wanted to just get from point A to point B via U.S. military jets. The problem was it just cost a measly $25,000 per trip when they do that. They had been turned down several times. And what they found, of course, being as corrupt as these people are and shameless. I mean, you're making a lot of money. You already have a lot of money. Buy a damn ticket and go where you need to go by plane. You know? just get a regular ticket. But it costs $25,000 to make these trips, these private trips that they want to make, and to make an impression by getting off or deboarding from a U.S. military plane. These small things matter to them because they can be seen as, you know, the people we have arrived. We do not travel normally, like you schlubs. $25,000 every time they do that. And one of the tricks that they found out is that if they could justify a trip by military jet, by incorporating somebody else, some member of a cabinet or high position, then it could be justified and it wouldn't look so bad. So what's his name? Mnuchin of the Treasury fame, who you may recall him. He got married to, I think she's like a B actress, and I'm being kind about it, from Britain. And they were caught using, again, one of those $25,000 an hour planes, U.S. military planes, to go observe, the what was that thing that you called it? And the moon was changing and blocking out the sun and whatnot. And they thought it was going to be so romantic. And we, the people, are footing the bill. These people, the one thing you find out with this kind of wealthy people is that they're so greedy. They can't help themselves. They try to find ways in which they could stiff and get everything for free. Stiff the people. Leave them with the bill. And Trump is their leader in this regard. His attitude is, hey, I'm the president. I could dip my hand into the till as often as I want. And all these things that we're getting, we could get for free. Why are you president if you're not enjoying these bennies? So, but in any event, I wanted to talk about the fact that I don't know if you've observed it, but it seems that the Democratic Party, like the Republican Party, but the Democratic Party in particular, seems to be kind of coming apart at the seams, or put another way, it is not gelling as it ought to at this time within the election cycle. It should be, you know, they should all be on one page. But you're getting a lot of signals that people have different opinions, and these people are in line to be president of the United States. That's what they want to do. They want to run. So you could regard them as candidates or soon to be candidates. All they have to do is to announce formally that they're running, but for all intents and purposes, many of them are running. And now, having faced down Trump on this border wall thing, Nancy Pelosi is once again feeling her oats. She whipped him. She got him good. He is, of course, rebounding with a vengeance. And we see that evidenced in his budget request, where he wants $8.9 billion on top of the money he already requested. And we have the largest, one of the largest deficits in a budget ever, because it piled on. It's an election year. This is when the parties go crazy. But this particular president is totally out of control with crazy. So we are about to embark on an unprecedentedly high budget. And the money is going to have to come from somewhere. And naturally, they're not going to pay for it. All he has to do is to request it and make somebody else pay for it, namely us. But what is shaping up is very interesting. Nancy Pelosi is being challenged. They kind of put a damper on that for a little while because the Democrats needed to, come together as one against the president. They won that one fight. But now we're seeing some fractures. And it is troubling me that these Democrats, these enlightened Democrats, many of them are playing into some very strange hands. I would draw your attention to, let's see his name, my notes here. I just got to get him. I'm in a constant battle with my notes. We have Julian Castro announcing that a priority for him is reparations. And this has become a kind of interesting touchstone. Reparations. All you have to do to attract black voters in particular is promise something around reparations. Mention the word, mention your commitment to reparations as a part of justice. We have the anomaly that Bernie Sanders says he's not interested in reparations. He does not believe, as outlined, it will actually address a problem. Just getting people to define themselves in terms of descendancy from enslaved Africans in America, and supposedly they will be financially compensated. So it's gotten quite a bit of traction, and people are very excited about it. For one thing, it is perhaps the first time in a long time that people are being noticed in terms of having unique needs that would be best addressed by legislative action. So Julian Castro seized on this very early. We have Sanders addressing it, but in a kind of negative way. Not negative that he's wrong, it's just that he says, in his view, use the money differently because it's going to be so difficult to decide how this thing could work. So many years after slavery and all the logistical work that has to be done, the best thing would be to spend some time planning and researching, etc., and then we could get to it. But then we have some interesting reaction to reparations. African Americans now are just all perked up about reparations. I am not one of them. It is not that reparations is a bad idea. It is that I feel in my gut that this is being used as a kind of psychological club to bash people's brains into aligning themselves with the Democratic Party. It is not a genuine discussion. If reparations were a major point that, let's say, a candidate wants to make as a point in his or her program, political program, you don't announce it. We're practically on the cusp of an election. It goes without saying you're not prepared. You're not prepared to discuss this seriously. But you are prepared to use it as a battering ram, as a kind of bait for people who emotionally identify with this. So you go around talking about reparations. And yet there isn't a single piece of evidence. If I were to ask any of these people running around talking about reparations, and I would ask them, for example, what's your plan? What have you come up with? Guess what? I don't think you would be surprised when you discover there is no plan. And this is what I mean by extreme disrespect to our community. When something this serious is treated so casually that even blacks are treating it casually, they're talking about reparations. And yet they don't have the single a page of a plan. And to me, it is an insult. And it is wrong for people to be so casual about this, to use it as a kind of political, how you draw flies with honey. I should think that we are way beyond that. We don't deserve this kind of casual, backhanded treatment. The issue of reparations is exceedingly serious. And you don't float an idea in 2019 so that you get people's attention and their vote in 2020, and then whatever the hell happens, it happens. No. You see, we have to teach people how to respect us. We're not stupid, and we're not so emotionally bereft that we w once you say reparations, oh wow, you're good. It's just a selling tool, a sales tool. These people talking about reparations have not prepared anything that says, I have given this matter some thought. And these are my thoughts. And these are the thoughts that we ought to use in further discussions. You can't by yourself decide what reparations should be, who should get them, how this whole thing will work. And it is disingenuous and downright disgusting that for the sake of some votes or situating yourself as if you have a unique concern about the African American community, but you are exploiting a deep emotional wound and playing with it. Just for that, I think people should just scratch your name off of any kind of ballot between now and the time you die. You should never be allowed to get away with something like that. All the years that you were in, you know, some kind of city or state office, reparations didn't cross your mind. But now, just about everybody is a reparations person. Just say reparations and you'll be good. You're in. You're in the realm of choice for these emotionally hungry people who have been yearning for centuries to have their unique needs recognized by a system that is just toying with their emotions. So the next time somebody mentions the word reparations and is pretending that they actually have a plan, we should demand to see it. The full length and breadth of your reparations plan. You know they're not doing it, and they haven't done it. Because, you see, you're dealing with black people. You don't have to respect that. Any old thing would do. It's like throwing meat to the dogs. They'll get all excited about it, although you have nothing to offer. And you're playing games. And black people also are allowing people to do this. I don't get it. The word should go out. Do not come to our communities talking about reparations unless you have a plan, a detailed plan that we could discuss, dissect, and see whether it makes sense. How dare you think that all you have to do is say reparations, and then we are so emotionally needy that would serve as a way to twist our brain. We forget that you are lazy. We forget that you have no interest, no real interest in the matter. But we are happy simply to have you mention reparations. Meanwhile, you are trampling all over our collective memory. And you are using an extremely painful collective experience as a backdrop to your political ambitions. That is disgusting. And we ought to say so. We ought to let them know, unless you have something to show, as a plan or an effort that you have been making over the years to address or to begin to address this problem, shut up. Don't mention it. Keep moving. We don't need you to take this issue on in order to placate, in order to make people believe that you are sympathetic to the Black community. That is not being sympathetic to the Black community. That is exploiting, emotionally exploiting the Black community. And I always talk to people like that. Oh, we want to do this, we want to do that, we want to do the next thing, and when I get elected, blah, 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 blah. All I want, forget all the talk. Show me your plan. And that's when you hear, we getting together now and we meeting and we discussing. I don't want to hear that. You have no plan. And you don't intend to have a viable plan anytime soon. Now, I would very much respect that position. If you say this is an issue we must address and we must begin to address it now, I could appreciate that. And you tell people, we have no plan. Our plan is to begin a national discussion on reparations. Not just national, actually, it's a global discussion. So the obvious question would be, on a global level, who are you talking to? What plans have you studied that appear to be, you know, workable plans? How has it shaped your opinion? What symposium, what international symposium have you called or assembled leaders in this area? What are their recommendations? You see, when you insist on being respected, these are the questions that you ask. You don't have time for fly-by-night people who are using you as a cliche. And who are thrilled to death that people are having such a profound reaction to this idea that, well, so-and-so is talking about reparations, but so-and-so is not. The fact is, nobody is talking about reparations the way this matter ought to be discussed. And it cannot be done by 2020. So don't even try to put that in my head. So that's what I want to start with today. At 888-874-4888. I know. My God, Eutrice, you're so rough. Nothing seems to please you. Well, yeah, you're kind of right if that's what you're saying. But I really detest it when Black people themselves minimize the seriousness of things that matter to them and treat these matters like cliches without even respecting the actual history of this and what people bring to this experience when they discuss reparations. This is not a 2-hour discussion. And we should not allow, unless you are prepared by demonstrating studies you have done, reports you have done and compiled, a a major thesis on this matter and what is possible, and you're treating the subject matter very, very seriously, unless you have done that, then shut up and get out of our way. See, that's the way I think people ought to deal with these kinds of questions. You come to a community unprepared, and all you know that is that you would have a pretty good chance of putting your foot, you know, in the ring and attracting the support of people by treating this matter so trivially. 888-874-4888. This is our first subject for today. And we'll take our first call. You're on the air. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice. Hey, how you doing,
Hello.
Eutrice?
Okay.
I got to respectfully disagree with you.
Okay.
I mean, there are several plans that are out there. CARICOM has a 14-point plan on reparations. I covered that conference at Queens College 2 years ago. There are other plans that have been addressed. There are plans that there are models like the Germans that the Germans gave the Jews reparations after World War II. There are models that were given to the Japanese Americans from the internment camps. There are models and there are designs out there. But like you said, you've got to be serious with it. We're 20-something months away from the election. 20-something months and some change away from the election. And it's too early to discount some of these people. Castro, some of them, they're making some good plans. I can't expect them to treat it seriously because, as a people, we haven't treated it seriously. But there are groups of people, myself included, that really have been taking a look at reparations and see viable plans. For example, putting money towards institution, putting money towards first home buyer programs, putting not just giving somebody a check, but putting money towards social engines that we were deprived of for the past 400 years. And this is the time. This is the time when people are really starting to take this seriously and starting to take a look at it. I mean, for how long have people have the government dismissed John Connors? H.R. 440, which just was a discussion about the possibility of reparations. There's a movement, and it's building. I feel I'm part of it. You have Dr. Sandry Daudry. He has some definitely economic ideas about reparations. Can something be put together before the election? I believe there's enough for people, and there's enough information out there that with sincere scholarship, something can be put together and presented to these politicians that are making claims of being in favor of reparations and hold their feet to the fire. But we got to do it as a movement. We got to do it as a people. I totally disagree with you. There's enough research out there that if you're scholarly and you put the work in, you can find it. Because I have found it. It's not a pie-in-the-sky dream. There's a legitimate claim by African-American people for recompense, to be made right. And we have been made right. We've been made a pariah from the beginning. We were not only, if you're talking about a race, we were the shoes. And now that the quote, for want of a better word, white people have ran the race and won, they want to get rid of these shoes and get a new pair of shoes. We need to be made right. And there's a way to do it. I'm not a total scholar. I've done my research in it. I know about some plans. I know about some things. But there's a way to do it, and this is the time to bring it to task. This is the time. I can't agree with you on that point.
Okay. I appreciate that. I appreciate your argument, but I also disagree with your argument. This is 2019. We have just a little hop, skip, and jump before the general election in 2020. We should worry less about timing this move or tying this move into an election. We shouldn't worry about that. We should worry that we are doing meticulous work in preparation, making an ironclad argument, and building the idea not only of this is what is possible, but this is what we are advancing as a collective agenda. That's not happening. People are talking.
I disagree with you. There is an ironclad idea out there. And there's a majority of people, the new name for, if you want to throw ADOS people, you have Yvette Carnell, you have Antonio Moore, you have Sarah Daughtry, you have Hendrix Becklesley. You have a lot of people out there. I mean, it's a critical mass is forming. And I believe
yes, but you're missing my point.
Out there.
Huh? My point is, you're missing my point. My point is, if this is a political fight, you can have whatever ideas you want. Mm-hmm. Where is your political apparatus to reasonably guarantee that you're moving this from point one to point six? That is organizational stuff. It is not coming overnight. And I, this is the thing I have had a problem with Black efforts, where people don't understand how important it is to match what their wants and needs are with the reality of politics. How is that done? You can't do it in 2 years. You could barely do it in 20.
I disagree with you. I mean, we have a platform. We can present it, and we can hold politicians to it. I don't agree with you. I really
yeah,
don't.
Yeah, but this
I
is
mean,
not a thing about
opinion,
holding politicians
agree.
Accountable. This is about doing an act that does justice to an experience in this country that and outside of this country as well that has been so painful. We can't take chances. This is not a thing where you try it, well, it didn't work. No. It has to work.
No, I'm not telling you. You can't take chances, yes. But you've got to start somewhere. And up until this point.
Where you start is by not trivializing what you're doing. This is not a thing that neatly fits with a political campaign. This is a thing you do when you are ready and all the pieces are in place.
I hear what you're saying, but I don't agree. I mean, I feel that we are ready. I mean, there is enough information out there. There's a large enough consensus out there, and there are hard economic formulas and ideas that can be put forward and formulate a platform and be made to push forward. I mean,
beyond the point of ideas. If you have ideas, they should be real. They should be cataloged. They should be distributed. They should have been the point of discussion for months, if not years now.
But
you can't jump out there
to.
Like a jack in the box and say, well, we're talking reparations. And as if you don't understand the enormity of what you're proposing to do.
Listen, you're talking, I've dealt with individuals. We've been discussing this for years. I mean, I've dealt with individuals.
We've been discussing it for years, but we have not upgraded the methodology. We have not put out a comprehensive plan. All we've been doing is talking.
Yeah,
this is not one of those things
plan.
You get done by talking.
You treat. There's a comprehensive plan. CARICOM has a 14-point plan. The ADLS movement has a 10-point plan. I mean, I can send it to you. I mean, some of the points.
I've been following the subject. Believe me, I've been following this subject of reparations, both in the United States and in the Caribbean. I've been following it. It's the same problem.
What I'm saying,
there are a lot of
plans
people talking,
out there.
but very little in the way of a solid plan and the methodology of approving a plan, any kind of plan, I don't care, but get people to vote on it. And that requires a recognition that you don't go in just talking. When are we going to get over that? The talking is to inform your methodology to win. You don't have a guy showing up, popping up now saying, well, I'm running in 2020. It's a year from now. That doesn't indicate the seriousness. That doesn't indicate the vastness of this issue.
I'm not talking about the political players in the game. I'm talking about the movement and the people behind the movement that are presenting the platform and holding this political person to it. I mean, come on, this system is built with liars. And people make promises from now until the sun comes on. Now the sun comes down. But people and movements are what cause change historically in this country. From the New Deal to the Civil Rights Movement, it's people and movements is what cause change. And we have a movement. And we have people, and we have a platform. There's going to be, I told you before, there's going to be a gathering in October with some of the ADOS followers, and I'm going to try to be there, and we're going to establish some guidelines. But we can't, I don't think it's, well, first of all, I'm not playing with it, and the people I associate with are not playing with it. We have done our research, and we have looked at the data, and it's time. Because, quite frankly, I don't think if we don't make a move now, then our children's children are not going to have anything in this country. I mean, it's coming to a point to where the African-Americans are becoming an afterthought. And if we don't make a stand, we're not going to have anything to stand on. You know, they're talking
not
about global warming.
We're becoming basically not even a completed thought because we are not doing things the right way. Now, I agree with you. There are a lot of people working. A lot of work is going on. But you have to recognize that this is a highly political issue. We're not getting even a consensus as to what reparations are for. A simple, basic thing like that.
Well, I mean, the largest amount of people need to be educated to understand what reparations, what the idea behind reparations is, and what the purpose of reparations are. The bottom line, as far as I'm concerned, reparations are to every immigrant group that has come into this country has had the opportunity to become quote-unquote whole. They've had the opportunity to participate in the economic development and prosperity of this country, even after they've been ostracized, from the Italians to the Chinese to the Jewish to the Irish. They've all been ostracized at different points in this country's history, and they've been given the opportunity to become accepted and become part of society.
But you're preaching to the converted.
Well, I mean,
I'm talking about what is the plan? Where does it exist?
Well, I told you that there are elements of the plan that are in the works now. There are plans that are out there. And I believe that we're coming to a point. Well, I believe that after October, you're going to see. We're going to come to a point where we have a positive plan and something to step to these people with. I believe it's already out there. Like I said, CARICOM has the 14-point plan. The ADOS movement has another plan. If you're familiar with Yvette Carnell and Tone Talks, that's another podcast. They have a definite plan. Sandra Daugherty's been working on plans as far as even Cory Booker has adopted some of the things like baby bonds and things of that nature. But there are ideas and there are plans out there, and there are people that are better versed than I am as far as expressing them. I don't have all the information in front of me, unfortunately. I wish I did. Some of the stuff that I got at home in my notes as far as meetings that I've been to. But believe me, this has been going on for a long time. This is not, these people are not new kids on the block. Nobody's trying to belittle or diminuize this claim of reparations. I've always believed we deserve reparations, and I think this is the time to present it, and this is the time to make a move for it. And you know, I've got to respectfully disagree with you.
I understand that you disagree, and I understand your position, and I can't deny it. There are a lot of people who have been working all over the place in defining reparations and so forth. I am coming from the position that until you are ready, you should kind of concentrate on getting your act together. We're not there. And it is wrong. It is wrong, in my view. I use the word wrong. Mm-hmm. To simply take on such a very serious matter in the interest of, you know, having it fit into anybody's political agenda. But beyond that, they have no plans themselves. If I were to ask all of the political proponents of reparations, it's a cliche. It's a cliche to them.
Well, it's a cliche to them, but it's
done to make them look, you know, radical. It is done mm-hmm. to make them look like they're in touch. But they have no plans.
I understand what you're saying, but I'm saying if they want to look at it as a popular thing or something to make them look good as a trend, quote unquote, I don't care. I'm going to present them with a plan. Based on the research that I've done with the people that I know, I'm going to come with that plan and say, here's the plan. You win reparations, here's the plan, implement it. Put it in your political platform. I'm going to give you what I want you to do, because that's what politics is about, the bottom line. Politics is theoretically supposed to be for the people. It's not supposed to be for the politician.
All this sounds great. But then you have the issue of there is no plan. There are 400 different plans.
There's Fred down
the block who has a plan. There's Mary in Queens who has a plan. There's somebody in the Bronx who has a plan. Great. But there is no plan.
We're working on it. We're working on it. Believe me. We're working on it. I'm not the spokesman for the entire movement. But I've been to meetings, I've spoken with people for many years, and we're working on it. And we're coming together with something. Like I said, CARICOM has a 14-point plan. 2 years ago, I covered them at Queens College, and that plan sounds viable. There are elements of that plan that can be incorporated. There are other people, much higher minds than mine, that are working on it. And I think you should work on it also. I think you should involve yourself with it and work on it also. Because I believe this is the last thing that we're going to have to present it. I honestly believe it. I don't think if things go the way they continue to go, I think we'll become an afterthought of a footnote in history as a people unless we make a stand. And that's my emotional plea to it.
All right.
Anyway.
Ed, you put a lot on the table for us to ponder today, and I thank you very much for doing so. And hopefully this would lead to further discussions. All I'm saying is I don't want anybody playing around with this as a kind of casual endeavor, as a kind of, phrasing that puts you in a political category where you could later defend yourself and say, see, I'm down for it, but they have no plans. And until something emerges as a cogent response to centuries of exploitation of people, we should not accept anything until it comes before the people and there's discussion about it. But for some politician to just wake up and say, well, I favor reparations, you don't even know what the heck it is. And we shouldn't be casual about this. There's nothing to be casual about. This is a purposeful endeavor. This is something that has to take into consideration the sanctity of the effort. This is not for your political biography. And until we do that and treat it that way, we will get no respect, and we will continue to be part of the dishonoring of our own history. Great job you did today. Thank you so much, Ed. Jay from New York, you only have a few minutes, but you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Utrice. In regards to the reparations, I kind of agree with you. There is no concrete plan. The organizations can't even seem to come together to formulate a plan. And like most of these things, it's too scattered. And as long as it's scattered, nothing is going to be able to collectively come out of it, because there's too many ways to pick the situation off by pitting one against the other. So if they don't come together with a consensus and a closed door consensus, then this is just going to be nothing more than the usual. Now, what I really wanted to speak to you about was, you were talking about the budget. Now, my question to you is, because I'm not really sure, isn't this just a proposal? There's nothing concrete in this. Don't they have to now debate this in Congress, go over it, and fight? Because my position is this. El Sicko said 3 years ago that he wasn't going to touch Medicaid, Medicare, and any Social Security or any other, program that was designed to help the disadvantaged. Now, all of a sudden, he's changing the tune. Isn't it the job of our politicians, now that they have control of the Congress, the Democratic side, to now work and put forward a proposal that would be fair and keep these things in checks and balance? Because if you notice, over the years, that's basically what has happened. George Bush at one time talked about privatizing Social Security. You know, there's been other things that have been said in regards to Medicare and Medicaid, but there's always been this type of fight back. Now, the one thing that I do think may cause a problem is that this guy in office is not inclined to shut down the government if he doesn't get his way. So, I mean, it's really all about how is the narrative going to be expressed in this country, and how, you know, people are going to be able to articulate that at this time we need these programs and we need to be looking at cutting back the military and other things of that nature that are not rewarding the people or giving the people anything that will allow them to have somewhat of a quality of life. Because mind you, with those type of cuts to that program, it's going to hurt all Americans. You know what I mean? Because the quality of life changes. So once a person's quality of life changes, then their family members, if their family members cares about them, are now going to have to come in the system. So that affects those that have a little more than others. You know, so there's always more to this. But the problem I always see in this discussion is there's never a true narrative of it.
Well, you're right about the fact, and this is something I try to stress, that this is simply a proposal. This is what the president wants. He has made some observations about where money could be gotten from and reallocated to other purposes. All of that is in play. The role now is for the Congress as a whole to figure out what is doable in this proposal, how to react to this proposal. And it's a lot of negotiation. But what is clear is the president's intent in formulating this budget. It pretty much expresses his intention as to where he's going to go and how he's going to spend the people's money. Now comes a big fight. One supposes there will be a big fight because a lot of what he wants to do is downright insane. And secondly, no self-respecting economist or budget expert would say that this is a good and fair budget.
But you know something, Utrice? In all honesty with you, I don't even think he understands the budget. I don't even think he's the person.
Let me make it clear. This is not the result. This budget is not the result of Donald Trump spending sleepless nights figuring out how to write a budget.
These are other people that are making up this budget, that once they make this budget, they've been presented to him, and he just says, go ahead and do it. I don't even think that he's read the budget. I don't think that he's had discussions in regards to the budget. I don't even think if you ask him questions about the budget in detail that he would be able to answer it. I mean, these are the Stephen Bannons and you know, the Millers and the rest of these crazos that are surrounding him that are writing and putting this together. The Grover Norquist and the others that are doing it.
But the budget comes out of not only what they think the president would want, but in fact discussions presumably that the president has had with them about what he wants to accomplish and their so-called expert advice translated into policy concepts in a budget.
Yeah, but we all know that. But we're running out of time. Let me say this right quick. He say to him, well, I want to spend more money on the military. So with that, then they go and they put this madness together. But the bottom line is the Democrats are going to have to change the narrative on this. They're going to have to fight back. They're going to have to do the necessary things to point out to the people that this is madness. And I don't know if they have the ability to.
You would think that, but we don't know. Because we're waiting to see signals that they're ready for a fight. We're not seeing it yet. Thanks for your call, and thank you, Ed, for calling as well today. That brings us to the end of our program today, and we'll see each other again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.